You ready to go?
Wait. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, all right. Hello and welcome again to another episode of Sacktown Talks. Today we have a special guest joining us today. We have Senator Maria Durazo joining us from the 24th Senate District. Senator Durazo, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm doing great, thank God.
Yeah, interesting times to be alive and kind of, you know, in preparation for this show, I kind of was, you know, digging in your background, and you have a quite a fascinating background, kind of, you know, growing up in the Central Valley, going to school up here in Northern California, and then, you know, ending up in LA and kind of working through the labor movement through the past few decades. Can you kind of, for our listeners who don't know, can you kind of give us a little background about yourself and how you made your way to Sacramento?
Sure. Well, as you said, we were a migrant farm worker family. So actually, we would travel town to town from Calexico all the way to Northern California, to Marysville, Sacramento area, and even as far as Oregon. So I got to see all these little towns. We never really stayed in big cities, but saw a lot of small towns. And by being in Fresno, kind of settling down in the Central Valley, got connected with St. Mary's, went to school up there, have family in Northern California. But I got connected with some activists while I was at St. Mary's from Los Angeles. Turned out to be, you know, someone I married, and then decided to come to Los Angeles. So I am really glad I did, because I love Los Angeles. That was, you know, I don't know, 40 plus years ago.
Right. You know, I guess it's interesting because, you know, with your experience, I guess, up and down the state, I guess you've seen it kind of grow and change. Have you been back, you know, since you've been elected to some of these farming communities and see, I guess, how they've changed since, you know, when you were a child?
You know, I've been through, I traveled through, Fresno is probably, again, you know, the hometown there. And in some ways there's been some changes. Certainly Fresno has grown enormously, from that time. And in other ways, unfortunately, it hasn't changed the way that you would want it to, you know, especially with regards to some of the poverty that's there. But I think it's, you know, beautiful people that live in those towns that work really, really hard. And it reminds me how grateful we need to be for all the hard work that goes into our agricultural industry. Those farm workers are pretty amazing families.
Right. So, you know, once you moved to LA, you got involved with the unions down there and you became, you know, the leader of Unite Here. Were you mostly working in DC and internationally, or were you working state issues as well?
You know, actually, I was president of my union in Los Angeles. I always stayed in Los Angeles. And when I got into different positions, either regionally or nationally, I still did my work out of Los Angeles. The focus for me has always been Los Angeles, except for certain things like immigration reform that we fought over the years very hard for and continue to try to get, you know, millions of people on a pathway to citizenship. So I was really glad to be able to go to different parts of the country, whether it was you know, Massachusetts or Florida, the East Coast, Chicago, the South, Texas. I was able to connect with a lot of the activism, whether it was community activism or it was the labor movement. Of course, in Washington, D.C., you have the headquarters for a lot of international unions. The AFL-CIO, I had a position there with the Executive Council. And all of that was pretty amazing experience for me, but always try to use that connection for Los Angeles and Southern California.
Right. So kind of what made you kind of want to switch from, you know, working with unions and kind of working with government to kind of, you know, running for office and being elected?
Well, as you said, I never envisioned myself being the candidate. I always was on the side of checking out the candidates.
Right.
Who were they? Could we trust them? You know, would they do what we wanted them to do, especially with regards to immigrant workers? and, you know, immigrant workers who don't have a ton of money, but who contribute enormously to this economy. You know, I always was on the side of, are you really going to get in there and fight for these families? So to switch it a little bit, I became the candidate. And I, truthfully, part of the reason I decided to run is we were in the middle, we had this campaign where somebody named Donald Trump ran, and there was the environment was changing a lot about immigrants, changing a lot in a very negative way about women. And I just felt that in the political arena, we had to have more voices for being more respectful of all of everyone in our community. So it sort of moved me. I don't know what exactly, but it moved me to want to run. There was a termed out, you know, district, and it was going to work out just right. It was in the district that I have lived in for over 30 years. So all the pieces just seemed to land. And I always felt like I'm going in there with no fear of being, you know, booted out, or that this community really had the same values as what I've always fought for.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, running for office and kind of working alongside politicians all these years, you know, I guess you've had certain assumptions about what the job would be like. I guess, you know, in your experience, have those assumptions kind of held up, or is it a little different than you thought?
You know, it's definitely different from what I thought. Some is the same, what I envisioned, but a lot of it is very different. I don't think we give enough credit to elected officials, publicly elected officials, for all the issues that we need to learn to be able to make decisions and vote. You have to learn everything from, this morning I was at listening to experts on water. Well, just that issue alone, you have to spend an enormous amount of time trying to understand the difference on water issues from Southern California to the Central Valley to Northern California. There's issues on education. There's issues on workforce development. There's issues on healthcare. So the amount of things that we have to learn in order to do the votes and feel good about the votes that we're taking is really a lot. And so I had not paid attention to that. I that's real different from what I thought was the case. So some things are the same. I know that there are, you have to do, you know, fundraising, which I hate to do. But you've got to fundraise. That's a part of running for office. You've got to have the financial support to be able to reach your community. And then the other part that I really enjoy is being able to get out to the community, to be able to get out into the district, whether it's here locally, whether it's in another part of California, and get to know many, many more leaders and activists in our districts that are really passionate about what they do. There's a group called Mujeres de la Tierra here that watch out for the LA River. Is the LA River what it should be for the community? It's both environmental, but it's also out of respect for the community that's lived there for many years. So there's so many individuals, many more individuals that I met that I would not have met, I think, if I had stayed in the labor movement.
Coming from, you know, your union background, I guess, how much percentage of your time and effort in kind of legislative priorities are focused on kind of workers' rights and union issues versus, I guess, other issues?
Well, I would say that, you know, a good portion of my time, I don't know how to break it down, but it's really about workers, working people's issues. And whether there or not there's a union involved is really about working people's issues. For example, I had a bill that was signed into law to eliminate the subminimum wage for our disabled working men and women. That was not a union issue, but it was an issue, in my opinion, about the dignity of work and how, what's the least that we should allow to, that we should require to be paid to people right. who work. There are many issues that are not particularly quote unquote union issues, but they are about the dignity of work and the opportunities we're giving to men and women to do better in their lives. I have a firm belief that the poverty in California is due in a big part to we're not paying adequate wages and salaries to working men and women. And I know that working men and women have to, the families have to live like two in an apartment, two families in an apartment. Well, that impacts those kids' ability to do better in school. It impacts whether or not they have connectivity, you know, privacy issues, there's healthcare issues. There's all these things that go back to how are you doing in your job? Do you have a, do you feel like you really can move forward, that you're going to do better in life instead of getting stuck in one job and at a low pay? That's just not good and healthy for everybody. So while some might, you know, look at it as a union issue, I see it as the dignity of a working person's issue.
Yeah, it's kind of been an interesting, I guess, year or a couple of months is that, you know, a lot of, you know, businesses need workers and, you know, just people aren't coming back to work. And you're hearing from a lot of businesses that, you know, they're down employees or it's very hard to find employees. Kind of coming from your background and kind of what you've known and what you've seen, kind of why do you think people aren't coming back to work as we expected them to?
Well, I think it's probably a sense of, you know, this job should allow me to do better in my life. And when I'm willing to take the risks to go to work, you know, is there respect for this hard work that I'm doing? So, you know, I've not done, you know, any kind of a study on this, but just in general, I know that when people feel respected in their work, when they're paid good wages, when they see themselves as having a future and a career in that work, they want to go to work. They're not hesitant to go to work. But right. if any of those issues are lacking, if they're not getting paid something that's fair and decent, then they're not going to be excited to go back to work. Or if they think that they're risking their lives and there's not, you know, a respect for that work, they're not going to want to go back to work. If they see that they're stuck and unable to get somewhere else, a future to look forward to, they're not going to be excited about going back to work. So I think, you know, I have yet to hear, now in this case, I will invoke the word union, but if I have not heard from unionized employers that they have any problems in getting people back to work. They know, those workers know that they have decent wages and to high wages. They have health care coverage. They have a pension plan. They have a voice in work. I haven't heard too many problems or complaints from unionized employers.
Oh, very interesting. You know, as you kind of noted earlier, you know, one piece of legislation that you had signed, can you kind of, I guess, give us a recap on some other kind of bills you had signed by the governor on some of the things you were working on this year?
Yes. Well, we had a bill on the domestic workers being able to have a process to get to have health and safety rights on the job. It's not a requirement of domestic employers, household employers, but it's working in the direction of we found, for example, that domestic workers during the fires in Northern California weren't being given the equipment to be able to clean after the fires. They're being asked to clean, but they weren't given the protections or the equipment to properly clean and protect themselves. So we did that for domestic workers. We're going in the direction of them having sort of a health and safety rights on the job. That's another one. We also were able to get more low-income undocumented workers to have access to health care, which they didn't before. That really, really came to light with the pandemic, is that here you had essential industries, essential workers without access to health care. Of course, their ability to take care of themselves, take care of their families was impossible. Mind you, they're working, but they don't have access to health care. They're working, they can't even in the exchange buy health care for themselves. So we're able to include now in Medi-Cal those of 50 years old, 50 or older, would have access to Medi-Cal if they're low income. So there were, you know, a number of pieces of legislation like that.
Interesting. You know, I think it was announced a couple of weeks ago that, you know, we're projected to have a $32 billion surplus. And, you know, by the time the end of the year's over, maybe even more. Kind of, what are some of your thoughts of some of the priorities we should look at for next year on kind of spending and, you know, maybe solving some of the state's issues?
Well, I think that I mentioned having a briefing on water issues. That's one area that we ought to look at, is how are we addressing the infrastructure that's needed for us to be able to have water, to have clean water, to have affordable water. It's different within the Central Valley than it is in Southern California, but we ought to look at how that funding could be used for our infrastructure and maybe even to assist those families who can't afford to pay for good and clean and safe drinking water. So that's one. The other is our green infrastructure, transportation. We need to do a better job with public transportation. And that's an investment. It's going to take an investment on our part. At the same time, that would be good for the environment. It would create good, well-paid jobs and careers for thousands and thousands of people. So that's a good thing that we should invest in. Of course, you know, education, you know, will get automatically a certain increase in funding. That's a good thing. We had to look and see, even though we invested this last budget into the, you know, the internet and broadband issues, we ought to, you know, look at that again and say, is that sufficient? Are we going in the right direction? So there's a number of ways. I think those are really essential things that we need to look at. Workforce development, we have a lack of workers in certain industries that are really highly needed. There are certain industries where there's going to be retirement age leaving their jobs. Are we ready to replace them? There's certain jobs and careers where we don't have the diversity that we need in healthcare. We need more diversity when it comes to those jobs, doctors, that we don't have enough Latinos and other African Americans, so, and women. So we need to do a better job on the workforce development level with, you know, high road employers and high road training programs. So I think that there will be a lot of ways in which we could invest in people now in such a way that it's going to be good in the long term, not just, you know, spending money for the sake of spending money.
Right. You know, a lot of the past, what, year or 2 years, a lot of talk has been about homelessness and how to address the statewide homelessness issues. You know, kind of in your district, have you seen things improving in the homelessness front with all that's been spending? And do you see things, I guess, improving?
And I'm glad you brought that up, because housing is another area where we could invest more of our revenue. I do see spots of improvement. I know here locally in my district, there are several areas in which there's at least short-term, immediate shelter and housing, and then a wraparound services. that is being done. There's at least four areas in my district where hundreds and hundreds of unhoused were persuaded to leave their tents, leave living on the streets, and go into temporary shelter and be open to getting the services that they need. By the way, that was another bill. Actually, it was in the budget, started out as a bill of mine, which is a homeless hiring tax credit for employers who hired currently or just recent unhoused individuals so that they could get a job and they would be paid 120% of the minimum wage. So I think I could see things starting to happen with more urgency, and I'm hopeful that other things that we're doing around creating more housing and creating more affordable housing, that will have even greater impact in with regards to our needs.
Yeah. You know, next year is rolling around here pretty quick before we know it. What are some of the pieces of legislation you're looking to kind of introduce next year, or maybe you already have introduced that you're looking to kind of work on and address coming up next session?
Well, I think that there are still a few issues around criminal justice that I am particularly interested in. One of those is the sunsetting of records, criminal justice records. That we know that there are 8 million Californians who've either been arrested and or convicted. That means it will show up for the rest of their lives on their records. And that has a huge impact on those individuals, the kinds of jobs that they could have. It has an impact on programs they could become eligible or ineligible for. They can't even do things in many cases, such as be coaches, you know, to their kids' teams. There's so many ways in which we're impacting them by having these records on them for the rest of their lives. We spend an enormous amount of money, I know, because my budget oversees the criminal justice system. There, we spend enormous amounts of money while they're in incarcerated or right after they get incarcerated. There are so many ways in which they want to get back on their feet, but they can't. We invest in them and we say, so that they wouldn't be reincarcerated for something else. And yet they still have these barriers to jobs, barriers to housing, barriers to, you know, reintegrating. So that's one thing I'm looking forward to addressing in the legislature. I think the environment, jobs connected to a cleaner environment, like transportation, there's those kinds of things. It's what I continue to be very, very much concerned and excited to address.
Yeah. You know, I guess, you know, you're home, you're in your district, you're talking to a lot of your constituents. What are some of the issues kind of on top of mind of a lot of your constituents coming in here to the end of the year?
Well, you mentioned one of them, which is our unhoused. Mm-hmm. It is of great concern. And I think it's starting to become a concern over, in some areas, over safety. So it's not only our compassion and how do we allow in a country, in a state that is so wealthy, how do we allow so many individuals to continue to live on the streets? So that's a big concern. Are we doing enough around mental health needs? We found that mental health needs are becoming younger for younger and younger individuals. And so are we investing enough there? The pandemic impacted a lot of individuals and young and older. So those are some of the things that have been brought to my attention. Of course, we want to make sure that and our small businesses, you know, do we have the funding to allow our small businesses to you know, continue to do better as we slowly reopen, give the support that our small businesses need.
Right. You know, there's been a lot of news lately about the Capitol Annex being closed down. Have you said goodbye to your old Sacramento office and had a chance to move into the new building yet?
You know, I was lucky that, you see, 2 days ago, I went to Sacramento, and it was the second day that we had moved into the new building. So I didn't get to say goodbye to the old office. But, you know, it's not as spacey in some ways, but, it's new. We just have to get adjusted to a whole different place. I guess we're going to be there maybe 3, 4, 5 years, right. 5 years, maybe as long as 5 years that I'm hearing. There's some minor things that we've got to get adjusted to, the walking back and forth,
right,
between
this
shoes. New building. Yeah. You have to have your walking shoes. I don't know. Maybe I'll buy a golf cart or something and find a parking space for that. Charge my colleagues, $2, to get them back and forth. It's going to be different. We have this open space that we didn't have before, because it was always you go down the hall and go into an office and come back, go back into the hallway. This is much more open meeting space that we have. So it's things to get used to. I miss the old office, that's for sure. They're all the same size, as I understand it, too.
Oh, they're all equal. There's no good or
they're
bad.
They're all equal. Yeah. So, we can't get punished and get thrown out of them.
Oh, good. Well, hear that, Tony?
It's a very nice building. Very nice building.
You know, the holiday season is kind of one of those seasons where, a lot of members give back to their community. Kind of what are some of the things you're working on, this Thanksgiving and Christmas to kind of help your community out and kind of give back?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. We just did for Thanksgiving. We did a number of our own food giveaways. You find that the need is still quite enormous. We have, in fact, should try to turn the camera around so you could see our hallway is packed with boxes of toys, that have been donated, either by individuals or by, businesses, who look to us to help find, the right ways to distribute these toys to children and to families. And I know those kids are looking forward to it. There are many families who are not going to be able to buy toys. And that's a really very sad thing to see in so many parts of our district. So I'll, get out there both food and toys, and then continue to see how can our safety net do a better job of getting our resources into communities? Sometimes individuals and families are intimidated, by the system, not quite sure how to navigate the system. And so they rely on not the official safety net, do the applications and fill out all those forms, but they rely on, an organization in their community down the street that does the food giveaway or does the, the toy giveaway. That's much more, they're much more trusting of that. So these community-based organizations are really essential to helping either access the formal safety net or, be able to get food and toys for their kids.
Well, that's great. Thanks for doing that and taking care of your community. That's a great story. And definitely within the spirit. So that's awesome.
Thank you. And I find more and more individuals are anxious to do something like that and contribute back to their communities.
Right. Definitely. Well, I know you're busy and we got to let you go, but thank you so much for taking the time and talking with us about your priorities and your background and we're looking forward to seeing what you're going to do next year, and hopefully we can follow up with you and kind of see how it's going.
Absolutely. Anytime. You make me feel very comfortable about what, you know, what we're talking about. So I appreciate you, and happy holidays to everybody.
Happy holidays. Thank you.